This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Seven oh five in the evening, and before we start talking about the good old Sedition Act, because
it never dies.
People want it too. That's the point. People seem to want it too, and it's never going away. Just looking at the last few messages that have come through on the subject of lowering the voting age, YM Chia says, I think the word that Bing might have been looking for is tactful. Earlier, Bing said tacky. I don't want to see another politician to tell youngsters to Pokemon go to the polls anymore.
The embarrassment is always worth it, though.
Yes, I love it. Having said that, though, Bing did say, no, he meant tacky. So, yeah, I think there is the expectation then that, yeah, Pokemon go or what is the new Harry Potter game? What's it called?
I can't remember.
Yeah, whether or not that's going to be what's used here. So
Marat's I just want to imagine the likes of Zahid Hamid going on TikTok to try and appeal to younger voters. I wonder how that would look like. It'll be fun.
I would watch that once and enjoy it so much and then just never, ever acknowledge it again. We also have a message here from Damien who says, being able to vote at 18, the youths have one extra election to learn the cause and effect of their actions, i.e. voting the wrong candidate, for example. And then by the time they hit their mid-20s, they'll have a lot more experience and maturity to vote for, quote unquote, the right candidates. Personally, I registered late for voting and it was only after participating in elections that I understood a lot more about what goes on behind the political scenes. And there are some very impressive youths in the student councils for uni and colleges.
And that is exactly one of the main benefits of being able to vote at a younger age. It is a habit. So the younger you start voting, the more that habit continues. You are also more likely to continue voting if you did eventually start. And being able to understand the consequences too is also an important part of learning about democracy.
Well, I think that that's the problem here whenever people talk about whether or not young people are politically engaged, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about that political apathy that tends to creep in. Conversely, it's very easy to be apathetic when you feel like you have no say. And so it is very much a chicken and egg. Yeah. You look at somebody and you're like, well, they don't care, therefore they don't need to have that right. But on the other hand, if you granted the right, they might want, therefore, to be more politically engaged. It's true that I did not take much of an interest in the country's politics up and until it was nearing in on the first time that I would be able to cast my vote. And then it meant a lot more. I mean, prior to that, I heard people talking, but, I was in my nonsense college phase of politics is not personal. I don't care about it, blah, blah, blah.
It's above me.
I was just... Look, I'm not proud, but that's who I was at the time. So I understand where you're coming from when you say maybe young people aren't politically engaged, but I have been engaged ever since I realized what my vote could mean.
Right.
And so I don't discount the significance of that ability to cast that vote.
Yeah, we also do have a tweet here that says, from Angie Khaled, that says, we need to see how the youth vote is distributed. For an insta-famous person to be voted in, they need to win the support of all age ranges.
Yeah, that's true. And that insta-famous thing, right? I mean, I know at this point we keep going on, everybody keeps going on only with one name in mind. But if you look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right, in the States, she is insta-famous.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't insta-famous and then became a member of the Sun. It's the other way around. But nevertheless, she is using her Instagram in very specific, very smart ways. So I'm also not kind of throwing that word around very lightly because, again, it's how people communicate now.
And I don't understand why it's still a bad thing anymore, seeing the fact that social media is now the new battleground to get your message out, to get the voters in and to speak to your constituents directly.
It's like online dating. The stigma is gone, but the stigma is still there. It's one of those weird balancing acts that people have to walk. But you can keep those thoughts coming through. We're talking about lowering the voting age. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. We are also now going to be talking about the renewed calls to abolish the Sedition Act. This is after preacher Wan Ji Wan Hussein was sent to prison to begin his one-year sentence for sedition. The charge is for a 2012 Facebook post about the Selangor ruler, Sultan Sharafuddin Idris Shah.
So the criticism from NGOs is directed at the Attorney General's chambers, who actually asked for a longer sentence for the preacher, from the original 9 months to 1 year. In a collective statement from 12 NGOs, they said that this move goes against the promise made by the Attorney General that there wouldn't be any more selective prosecutions in New Malaysia. The government has also come under fire for not abolishing the law yet.
So just to take a look at all the... At the timeline of this, so we spoke about the manifesto yesterday, yep. And repealing the Sedition Act is actually part of the Pakatan Harapan manifesto. And then once they came into power, it became more along the lines of looking into it.
We're reviewing it.
Check back with us soon. And since then, it has... There was a moratorium, and then that moratorium was sort of lifted in December. So,
and then in February, I think it came through from the government that said that... try not to use the Sedition Act, but then the police said because it's still something that we can legally use, we will still continue to use it.
So that's a very rough timeline of the Sedition Act and its comings and not really goings in our law, basically. However, de facto law minister, Dato' VK Liu, has said that it is expected to be abolished this year and replaced with a new law. But in the meantime, we're still seeing situations like this.
Yeah. So it does suggest that there is a need to either put a moratorium on it or just move on straight to abolishing it, because it does, a Malay Mail article does suggest that all Pakatan needs is a simple majority to abolish the Sedition Act.
To repeal it, yes. And so if that's the case, then the only thing that seems to be standing in the way of it would be this phrase that is often trotted out, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever we start talking about making any real significant changes in our country, the same phrase is trotted out time and time again, which is, we need to be careful about the sensitivities.
Yeah.
The sensitivities, you know, unnamed communities' sensitivities. We're all just supposed to know who it's in reference to. And because it is so vague and because it is said under the guise of, no, it's good for you. It's for you, really. That I just wonder... Firstly, I wish they'd retire that move. And I also wonder whether or not we are indeed that sensitive, whether or not we need the Sedition Act or there is enough in our law to cover us in that same vein. And also whether we are pandering to a vocal, perhaps ultra-sensitive minority.
Yeah, and that also came through from lawyer Edmund Bond, right, who said that, look, even if you try to pander to certain groups, they're still going to attack you and get angry at you anyway. And you're not also appealing to the NGOs necessarily. So why not just take a more authoritarian stance, in reference, of course, to Nem's joke about him being authoritarian, to just push through all these progressive policies?
Yeah. So while we wait to see what happens, I mean, like we said earlier, there's, at this point, decent amount of history of the government making statements and saying, look, give us a bit of time. Look, we're looking into it. So we will just have to wait. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. Hopefully they're serious about repealing it. But in the meantime, we're going to be talking a bit more about what stands in their way, really. Mm-hmm. We will be speaking with Melissa Sasidharan from Lawyers for Liberty. That will be coming your way after this. And of course, you can send your thoughts through WhatsApp 018-789-8899, call 7733-2900 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
Good evening. It's 7:15 and you're listening to Lynn and Kelvin. We're talking about abolishing the Sedition Act, or rather having not done so. So what's standing in the way? What next? Is it really about us and our sensitivities and feelings? Joining us on the line now is Melissa Sasidharan from Lawyers for Liberty. Melissa, thanks for joining us. So the fact that this is happening, I think, seems to be all the more shocking because it is occurring during Pakatan Harapan's rule when they've made those promises. Can the government fall back on the whole idea of separation of powers to distance themselves from this controversial conviction?
Well, of course, we're not demanding that the government interfere with the judiciary because the judiciary's independence must be protected. What we are appalled at is the lackadaisical attitude of the Pakatan Harapan government, many of whom, when they were in opposition, had themselves faced the sedition arrests, detention and charges. If they remember the dragnet then. So they know very well how oppressive and irrelevant this law is in Malaysia Baru. yet they have failed to act over the past year and a half. And on top of that, we must call out the AG's chambers for the reckless and inconsistent policy of persisting with this appeal in Wanji's case, because as far as we know, the vast majority of sedition cases post GE14 have been dropped. For example, the cases against Zuna, Eric Paulson, and Surendran, and Tien Chua. Although the AGC might say that in Wanji's case, there's already a conviction, but this reasoning is flawed because they have also cross-appealed to enhance his sentence, meaning they were not satisfied with just the 9-month sentence and they wanted to jail him longer. So this is just plain cruel and unjust. I can also remind the AGC, back in November 2018, in Tien Chua's sedition conviction, it was due to public pressure, and the AG's chambers did precisely just that. They withdrew the cross-appeal to enhance the sentence, and they did not challenge Tien Chua's appeal in his conviction, and consequently, Tien Chua was acquitted at the Court of Appeal.
And of course, we still have the Sedition Act, despite the manifesto pledging to abolish all draconian laws. When and how did that messaging change?
You know, I would really want to hear from the government why this is the case as well. They are now in power, and the Sedition Act should have been gone, just like the Anti-Fake News Act. But sometime in last year, post-GE14, the government announced a moratorium on the Sedition Act and other securities laws. But unfortunately, this moratorium was lifted due to the Seafield Temple incident, whereby issues of race and religion was exploited and played up by some quarters. And consequently, the government made a grave error of judgment and made a knee-jerk decision to lift the moratorium. And they used the sedition law and other laws to arrest dozens of people. This was actually unwise because whatever alarming or mischievous statements made by some quarters could actually be addressed using the Penal Code and the Communications and Multimedia Act, which the authorities actually eventually did when they charged several people connected to that incident. So when they charged, they did not use the Sedition Act. So the government knows the Sedition Act is problematic. It's very problematic, but they somehow lack the political will to abolish it.
So we kind of talked earlier about the rundown of all the times that statements have been made about this. But has, to your knowledge, have they offered any rationale for maintaining the act?
The government have not been very clear why this colonial era law still remains on our statute books. They have said that they will amend the Penal Code to include some elements from the Sedition Act into the Penal Code. Apparently, this is why they have been slow in abolishing the Sedition Act, as they have not figured out how to incorporate those elements into the Penal Code. But I must caution against this approach because the Sedition Act offences is just archaic and irrelevant in this day and age. You know, for example, you have things like causing disaffection against ruler, questioning right, status or privilege is an offence. But these offences do not cause public mischief or, you know, breach of peace. These are mere comments that offend certain people, but there are no criminal elements to it.
Now, NGOs are calling for the Parliament Standing Committee on Rights and Gender Equality to summon AG Tommy Thomas for a public explanation. Is the AG obliged to do so if the committee summons him?
Yes, the committee can do so for the AG to come and explain why he has made the decision to pursue the appeal in Wanji's case and further made a cross appeal to enhance the sentence. So he has to explain his inconsistent policy of dropping other sedition cases, but not this case. It seems very arbitrary. He also needs to answer, what are there any other pending sedition cases and what's his stand on this? You know, what about new cases, since there have been some investigations open under the Sedition Act post-GE14? And the AG has said in a recent forum that the Sedition Act, you know, might be there, but there will not be any new prosecution. But by this logic, you also cannot continue appeals, you know, because you cannot draw the distinction between existing and new cases. So if someone in a similar instance, Latifa Koya, the new MACC chief, had been summoned by the Parliamentary Select Committee on Public Appointments, and the AG, if someone should also cooperate and explain himself.
So does the AG or the government have the power to immediately reverse Wan Gee's conviction?
No, the AG or the government cannot interfere in the conviction and sentence, but I believe the case is going up on appeal to the Court of Appeal, and in this appeal, if the AG had been correctly advised, he should concede to the appeal by Wan Gee and let the court decide on the conviction only. That should be the way. And, you know, there is still a possibility for the Court of Appeal to decide on the conviction. And hopefully this time there will not be a cross appeal, meaning the AG's chambers not only wants the conviction to remain, but also they want, you know, a higher sentence.
Melissa, thanks for joining us today. That was Melissa Sasidharan from Lawyers for Liberty giving us an update on really the move or the lack of movement when it comes to repealing and abolishing the Sedition Act. If you have any thoughts, you can call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have some messages that have come through, including this from Emma, who says, when you are in power, you want to keep repressive laws. And that, I think, is the
fear. That is the true fear for me.
That is the absolute fear that a lot of people have. And I think that the longer the government takes to repeal, the more that fear will grow. Because it does feel sometimes when you look at the faces that populate our current government, you're like, ooh, you guys look familiar, except you weren't wearing this uniform before. And so I think with that, the further away you distance yourself from policies of the past, from the same sorts of repression that we've seen in the past, the better. You know, you shouldn't be like, give us more time.
The more time thing is also a little bit concerning, because if they continue to extend that goodwill, and they might be able to eventually turn back to us and say, well, we've waited this long to study it anyway, and it doesn't seem like people really care about whether or not we abolish the bill. They might just use that as a reason not to remove it.
And we're still getting messages on the subject of younger voters lowering the voting age to 18. MZ saying, Summit 18 can't understand whether the earth is round or flat. Well, this is MZ's opinion. And you expect them to have a political opinion? After 18, there is a chance to have a tertiary education, maybe be enlightened enough to make some judgment on political views. And I just wanted to reiterate that, again, I don't think that it's as if we're suddenly going to be swamped with 18-year-olds. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be swamped with younger voters. But it's not, I don't think we're going to see some huge groundswell of 18 and 19-year-olds, because it is a 5-year cycle, a 4 to 5-year cycle. So it is going to be more likely that we'll see people who are 20, maybe.
And enlightened by tertiary education? Really? There are a lot of dumb people with degrees.
Yeah, but also I don't think we should discount all the other reasons why people vote.
Yeah. And as our guest earlier said earlier that economic reasons, economic situations for the younger voter matters a lot more, because they are a lot more vulnerable to it.
Bob says, unless a delineation exercise takes place, the lowering of the voting age to 18 can mean the downfall of the government. The move will drastically increase the influence of rural votes. And you know, this delineation problem is one that I hope we resolve soon, because it's true that up and until we manage to do that, we're never really going to have a clean understanding of what our electorate will actually look like or how it actually falls and divides, because we're having a really false, kind of weirdly weighed down picture of everything.
Thankfully, the Election Commission is looking into that, because since it was, the last exercise was done, I think, just last year, they have to technically weight based on the Constitution. After 8 years, they're looking to processes to see if they can amend that exercise.
So we are going to be headed to a song and then the news, and then after that skip intro, where we're talking today about visual albums, as well as Thom Yorke's recent collaboration with Paul Thomas Anderson called Anima. It was released on Netflix. It's like a 15-minute art film, music video, visual album thing. So that's what we'll be discussing after this. You can weigh in, of course, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Tweet us at SkipIntroMY. In the meantime, we have Fleetwood Mac with Long Grey Mare, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.